Who would it be? Welcome to the Pride of Detroit podcast, the PODcast. We call that for a reason. It's the podcast. It's the audio version of prideofdetroit.com, your place to find everything you need to know about the Detroit Lions. We are part of SB Nation. Find us on prideofdetroit.com. Search for us on Twitter, at Pride of Detroit. Pride of Detroit on Facebook. We are on iTunes. And coming soon, once they launch it, to Google Play Music Podcasts. And coming also very soon to Stitcher and AHA Radio. I do not have those two confirmed yet, but they are coming soon. So if you like our stuff and you've been downloading it off iTunes like a peasant or from Blog Talk Radio, just know you will have more platforms soon, more ways to get our stuff. I am Chris at Chris Lemieux at Malkovich Plan on Twitter, joined once again by Ryan Matthews with one T in his name at Ryan underscore POD on Twitter, who is right now lying on a cot, half dead, really. And this podcast is going to go as long as it takes. Ryan, what did you just do before we started this podcast?
I took two NyQuil, but I should definitely be able to get through the entire podcast.
He says that right now.
Give my bed a little bit more credit. It's not a cot.
It looks very low to the ground. It looks very low to the ground. That's the only reason I say that.
Oh, well.
You're going to have to try to hold the microphone steady, too. I know that's hard with your shaking hands after you've consumed, like, two cans of tomato and water soup.
We can get into that later.
We will get into that later. Also in here, chuckling along, as always, and making a mess of his apartment with Thai food, Jeremy Reisman, the fearless leader of Pride of Detroit, managing editor at Detroit Online on Twitter, and he's drinking something.
So. I'm drinking water. Got to hydrate because we're all feeling a little out of it right now.
Hold on, you're allowed to consume water in California?
Yeah, I have a permit.
Okay, did you like borrow that permit from Alec Baldwin?
Yeah, he and I go back.
Have you been watching his dog?
Yeah, that's it.
Hold on. So for those who don't know, Jeremy does a bunch of dog-related stuff in Southern California. Whose dog were you watching the other day? Was that the dog that was, like, almost about to die?
Was it a David Lee Roth?
Yes, you were watching David Lee Roth's dog. But there was also a dog there that was, like, had, like what was its problem?
It had been breeded into oblivion and basically couldn't breathe, couldn't go up one step. It was just like this little Pomeranian mix it was a mess.
It was pitiful.
That thing was barely closer to death than I am right now.
For the record, that isn't David Lee Roth's dog.
His name is
Russ. You can Google it. I've Googled it. It's actually him.
Okay. Oh yeah. Heaven forfend we put David Lee Roth's dog on blast with slander.
No, it's a very healthy dog. It's a very beautiful dog. Very beautiful dog. I love it. I love that dog. Well, guys, guess what it is? It is April in the D. No?
No one cares. April
in the D. I was going to say, is that where you're going to put the music buffer right there?
I'm not putting any music. It doesn't deserve music because the Wings just lost. And they're like teetering on to holding on to that last spot for the playoffs in the NHL, for those who still care about hockey in this country.
They're still in right now. They're still in the sixth spot, even though they lost. But
still in that spot.
It's all going to come down to Saturday.
Yeah. Basically, like, if they can just get anything out of it, they survive, I guess.
All they need is a point. Just one
Meanwhile,
point.
The Pistons are, like, clinging on to dear life as well, but they will probably make it. So that'd be cool.
But the Tigers... Undefeated.
Tigers are undefeated, and it was by, like, I don't even know how they stayed undefeated in those first two games. By the time you're hearing this, they might not be undefeated because they're starting up, what is it, a new series against the Yankees here in Detroit on Friday?
The only way they're not undefeated when you're listening to this is if you're listening to this in 2018. They're going 162 now.
bold proclamation by Jeremy Reisman.
In 2018, there won't be baseball anymore. So,
oh,
you know, everyone who watches baseball will be baseball. Dead.
I was going to say there isn't going to be baseball after April.
That's right. So, well, I was going to get to the fact that there's probably going to be snow for the first Tigers game at Comerica. Like, that's going to be a thing. But since you've pushed me along to this, apparently that there's not going to be anything after April. Because apparently, according to the New York Post, the discovery of some kind of Planet Nine may or may not herald the end of the world.
Is this related to the Wings not making the playoffs, potentially?
It probably is. Probably the Sumerians were like, when the Wings go on, you know, a quarter century run, and then when it ends, all life shall, too.
I lied earlier when I said they need a point. They need either a Boston loss in regulation or they need to get as many points as Boston. So just to be clear.
Cool. Whatever.
As the prophecy foretold.
as the prophecy of Gilgamesh once told us on clay tablets in cuneiform. So, yeah, no, the New York Post apparently thinks that the world is going to end because there is apparently a Planet Nine, and its trajectory around the sun will cause asteroids to collide into Earth, like, as soon as the end of this month.
When has the New York Post ever been wrong?
Never, as far as I know. My real question is, if this is actually coming true, then what are, like... Is this going to happen before or after the NFL draft? Because if it's going to happen before, then I really want to opt out of writing all of this draft content.
That's a professional segue right there, by the way.
I wasn't even done with April and the D. Like, we haven't even talked about it, the million ways those two Tigers games took, like, 10 years off of my life.
Yeah, well.
Well, it's good to see Brandon Inge back. It's good to see Brandon
Inge
back.
Brandon Inge is back. So I want to submit this to the Inside Jokes, and you will be hearing it throughout the summer, that we have decided that Ian Kinsler looks like Brandon Inge in our newfound effort to watch Tigers baseball here at Pride of Detroit. And Brandon Inge is a player who used to be on the Tigers. Where is he now? Is he still alive?
No, he's not. He can't be in the league anymore.
Is Brandon Inge dead?
Okay, hold on. Let's clear this up. Brandon Inge 100% is alive. But no longer playing professional baseball.
Really? I thought he was still hanging on, but okay. So Ian Kinsler looks like Brandon Inge. So Pod Standard formatting style guide is now saying that any reference to Ian Kinsler will be translated to Brandon Inge.
And let's be clear, if you pull up like a Google image search of both players, they're not going to look anything alike.
They don't look alike at all.
If you look at the baseball stance, you look at the knee-high socks, and you just... close your eyes and dream. It's the same person.
if you click your cleats together three times,
your ruby red cleats,
you'll see Brandon Inge appear,
and because... he will ground into a double play.
He's still got that rocket arm, though. I bet
Brandon Inge wasn't one of those guys who used to pitch.
No, but he was the third.
Oh, right, outfielder thing. I thought you were talking about like one of these outfielders as pitching, kind of like what happened with the illustrious Don Kelly.
Oh no, Brandon Inge played the hot corner, and he wasn't coming out of the bullpen like Danny Wirth. I hope Hookslide is listening, so he can attest to my baseball knowledge right now.
Didn't we have like Mark Schlereth's son on the Tigers roster at one point?
We did. His name was Daniel Schlereth, and he sucked.
Yeah.
Yep. He was pretty bad. I think we actually acquired him in the Max Scherzer trade.
I think we did. Yeah, I think you're right.
When we traded Curtis Granderson.
It meant that Mark Schlereth was coming to Tigers games, and that was a terrifying proposition.
Like, speaking of Mark Schlereth and how he's an offensive lineman.
Are we trying to get back to...
I'm gonna try to take every opportunity to get us back to the draft.
Back to talking about the draft stuff and tech. Well, I don't think we really like Alex Reno isn't here, so I don't know what we're going to talk about the draft that isn't going to make us look like idiots.
Who cares? He doesn't know anything about the draft anyways. He's not too high on Jack Conklin, so I'm not too high on Alex Reno.
Plus, I mean, he's taking his talents to the freep. You know, he's sending that message to us.
The freep.
Yeah, Jeremy, can you go on record right now and let us know how you feel about being chopped liver?
Hey, man, I got things happening.
We do have things happening. We have some very exciting news maybe coming down the pipeline in the next week or two. Maybe, Jeremy?
Maybe. We'll see.
Trying to keep the lid on this pot here, but it's bubbling. It's bubbling real nice.
Yeah.
We've got something very exciting. If this does come through, we'll have something very exciting. If not, then...
If not, then I'm still looking after 80s rock band stars' dogs. And that's cool, too.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
At least he's in California. You guys want to chuckle at that. At least he's in good weather watching dogs.
Yeah, I'm here in... Yeah, the rest of us are in freaking Livonia or Toledo or something.
Don't hate on Livonia, but, you know...
You can hate on Toledo.
It rained today in L.A. There were cop chases that involved people doing donuts because the LAPD wasn't behind them.
Taking selfies with the totaled car.
And getting blocked off by the TMZ bus.
Yeah, yeah. That's
TMZ
the day in L.A.
making themselves the news, man.
You guys wonder why I think about leaving.
No, that sounds like reasons to leave.
Those
are
the kind of... Well, no, I love watching that sort of stuff from a distance.
No, I want to be there. I'll be right in that. Get a live report. Ask the guy who got in the car chase how he feels about the 2016 season outlook for the Detroit Lions. Speaking of those outlooks, the preseason schedule is out.
Now we're talking.
I almost went into your Laquan Treadwell take, but I decided that's a little stale. The preseason schedule is out.
It's out.
Yeah.
You know what that means. You know what that means. Hashtag Zach Zenner 2016 watch.
He's coming.
Has officially started.
It has completely begun. Jeremy.
Do you guys think Don Molbeck will get any time at center? I'm just wondering.
I kind of hope he does.
I hope he does. He's more than just a long snapper.
He's a god.
I promise to all of the Pride of Detroit faithful that I will have my Don Molbeck jersey when Alex Reno and I take our adventure to Chicago.
That is, yeah. We haven't said this on the podcast yet. You guys are going to Chicago.
Yes, and Alex is the only one who's getting credentials.
Yeah, so we decided from the get-go, well, first off, we should tell, just real quick, here's your preseason schedule. At Pittsburgh versus Cincinnati, at Baltimore versus Buffalo. There, that's it. Fine, whatever. Enjoy your Zach Zenner.
We play Buffalo every year. Why?
We've been playing in them since 2002, I think.
Well, if you had watched that Rod Wood video that he talked about the preseason schedule, because that's newsworthy, he talks about the Bills owner and how they have this agreement, and he used to be a Lions fan, and they end every preseason with them. But the major news is that we're not having that that rivalry game with the Browns, the preseason
rivalry with the Cleveland Browns. Yes,
yeah.
We're not having that anymore.
It's the only reason to pay that fans pay full price for those tickets.
Only one. We're going to get into those in a little bit here. We are going to, I think, talk a little bit about ticket prices because this has inspired us. But I want to get back to Chicago for a second.
Yes. And
so we wanted from the get-go to send two of our faithful over to Chicago for the NFL draft. And we wanted to send Ryan Matthews and Alex Reno, you know. Because apparently it wasn't for any actual journalistic reason, from what I understand. It was like you guys wanted to go because there's also a wrestling event going on there.
Yeah, up in Rosemont, Illinois. It's going to be a pay-per-view. It's Payback at the Allstate Arena. So that's really the only reason I'm going, and I'm going to try to get into the draft with a fake lanyard that says I'm Alex Reno's bodyguard.
That's going to go over really well. So
I'm hoping that Reno can get pictures of me being picked up and taken off the premises.
I hope he gets a picture of you getting tased. No, we will be at the draft in Chicago, and maybe, you know, that's part of our draft coverage that's coming up.
Be excited.
It's incredibly exciting.
Yeah. We're moving on up here.
Yeah, moving on up, we're trying to get some more stuff. We're trying to get more interviews going. This is kind of
Google Play, Stitcher.
Stitcher.
Making moves. Power
Tigers
moves.
Baseball, April in the D.
Strictly
April
power moves only.
In Strictly the D. Power moves. this first segment has been awful and terrible. I feel like I should give the people their money back right now. Except you didn't pay anything, this podcast's free.
Full refund. Courtesy of me. I'll send you a blank check. Except it has zeros on it.
I was going to say, it's not actually blank.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that. It's tax season, beloved. Don't get your identity stolen. I'm sorry, I meant refund season.
It is.
We should probably take a quick break here and try to rebound and actually talk about like actual Lions topics.
Oh, you said rebound. I thought we were going to do a segment on the Pistons. Oh, well.
It is April in the D. We could do something on the Pistons.
Oh, man. April in the D needs to die 100 horrible deaths.
It's April in the D, but the Lions aren't part of it. What can we do about that? I'm sure for a lot of those people, they are thankful there is no Lions in April, but those people can also suck it. This is a Lions podcast.
So we tell people.
So we make the assumption. And we're going to prove it next segment, because we're going to talk about season ticket pricing. I think that's probably our best bet. You know, us bereft as we are of draft news, the mock draft is going on for Pride of Detroit. And we'll get to some draft talk in the mailbag, but I want to talk about the season ticket pricing thing. It's something that we didn't really get to talk about when it came out, and I think me and Jeremy both have lukewarm takes on it.
Yeah,
strong takes. I don't want to sell ourselves short. We have strong takes on the Lions, and this whole act of raising ticket prices almost like every year, like clockwork, and whether or not that's fair given the state of the team, but. Come back, and we will talk about that. Hooray. All right, back again here in the Pride of Detroit podcast. Jeremy, we're going to try to be a little serious on this. This was a story that I think escaped our attention when it came out, but it is something we wanted to talk about because we were kind of saving this particular subject for a rainy day, and that is, for the third year in a row now, the Detroit Lions have raised ticket prices across the board. It's not just season tickets, from what I understand, but also like regular game tickets and everything else. Like, the prices have gone up.
Yep, and people are not happy.
No, people are not happy because it makes for a very easy target for obvious reasons, for the fact that, you know, a lot of people have all now begun to take this refrain. I don't know where it started. Like, you know, well, ticket prices should reflect the product on the field. I'm not sure how I'm not sure that's how this works, but okay.
I mean, I understand that point of view, but if that's your argument, according to Pro Football Talk, the Lions are expected to average around 24th in the league in ticket prices, which sounds about right.
Sounds usually about right for where the Lions have ended most of their seasons.
Right.
Right. Like, it's still fairly cheap, but yeah, I don't know what to do with it. Like, on one hand, I mean, I don't get the product reflect on the field thing. It is, you know, that's not how the supply and demand thing works. Like, if people are demanding the tickets and they have the supply, like, this is, I don't know, I failed economics. But I'm assuming that as long as people keep paying, it's not going to matter what the product on the field looks like.
Yeah, and I think, too, it's important to note that the Lions are actually, at least in I think a lot of people's opinion, are a team that's at least kind of on the rise. You know, they've played 500 ball basically in the last 4 years combined, which isn't terrible. It's at least competitive football. So 24th in the league, you could argue, is kind of a bargain even. And I know just the words ticket price increase just kind of boils the blood of some fans, but especially coming off a 7-9 season. But you have to realize these games are selling out.
Yeah, I mean, it's always hard, especially in this particular environment when it comes to sports fans and the economy, right? Because ticket prices keep going up across the board, and most people's incomes do not. So, and I mean, a lot of people who it is a fascination across sports, actually, not just with the Lions, about kind of the growing economic divide between those who you've always counted on to go to sporting events, who you've always kind of counted on to be there. Those diehard fans were usually from lower end economic brackets, and the people that I think a lot of these premium tickets want to get, like, they want to get the people who will pay for, like, you know, the club level seating and everything. Yeah. They want to, you know, or like in baseball, like baseball is a great example here. I'm going to give two examples of what I'm talking about. One is in baseball, and it's basically the New York Yankees, you know, most storied baseball franchise out there. And like, they have completely priced most of their fans out of the experience altogether. Like, and they do fairly well, but I mean, they've gotten in several conundrums here where some of their, it looks like they are trying to keep the poors out of their baseball game, like giving them suboptimal seating, and, you know, the people who are going to pay for their like $100 sushi meanwhile are getting like all the good seats.
Yeah. And then there was that John Oliver thing where they got their hands on three sets of tickets, and now they're just giving it to ridiculous people to sit in these VIP sections where everyone's, you know, dressed to the T. I think they had some guys dressed up as like the Ninja Turtles there the other day.
Yes, they did. They did. I remember seeing that on Deadspin. The other case is over.
They're positioned exactly directly behind home plate too. So you can't escape it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was on the broadcast. It's like, what was it? I think it was last year during Diamondbacks games, guys would keep sitting behind home plate wearing Los Angeles Dodgers jerseys and it looked bad on television. So, like, they tried to have people go out there and ask them to take off the jersey. But the other example would be over in Great Britain, over in England. Was it Liverpool? I remember some soccer club over there, like, all of their fans walked out in protest because they wanted to raise ticket prices for their soccer matches that would actually look a little more like ticket prices over here for sporting events in America. Like, they were looking at, like, something like a 30-pound raise or something in their ticket prices. And all the fans stormed out.
Well, I mean, if you're that adamant about ticket prices, that's kind of what you have to stage. And I don't think people are either angry enough or energetic enough to do something like that for Lions tickets.
I don't even think the fans are organized enough to do that. Like, you can do that in English soccer because all of your fans are organized enough to really do that. For Lions fans, I don't know if they would be organized enough to do that or, as you say, care enough.
Right. And it's not a passion thing. I think a lot of people realize this is just kind of comes with the territory of the NFL in general. Like, if you're going to support a team, it's going to cost you some money. You're going to have to spend $100 on a jersey. You're going to spend $80 a ticket for a game. It's just, that's what NFL fandom costs now.
I don't even know if it's like, I would say, well, first off, I would disagree with that. I don't think you need to spend money to support it. This pony makes more than enough money as it stands right now. Your team isn't going to cry poorhouse if you stop buying jerseys and tickets.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying basically if you're passionate enough where you want to go to games or you want to buy a jersey, it's going to be expensive. That's today's NFL.
And I would say, like, if you wanted to get them to, like, for me, it's just the American sports fan tends to be a little too cynical about this kind of thing. Because it is shown, like, that you can do something like what the Liverpool, I really want to say it was Liverpool. I'm pretty sure it was Liverpool. You could do something like that there, but I think a lot of American fans just, you know, either would see a problem with that because apparently for some reason expressing free speech and your rights as a consumer is somehow bad, but okay, whatever. And then, yeah, like, I'm sure there is a cynical side that says, well, if I don't have these seats, someone else will come out and grab them. But I think we're doing something a little unfair now because we're now painting this idea of maybe there being like a protest against the Lions raising tickets prices. And there's not. Like, they're still in demand. And as you said, they're still in pretty much the lower third of ticket prices across the league, which is crazy to think about that, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think that says something positive about the fan base, even though, you know, there's definitely a hardcore group of fans that are adamant that if you shouldn't be spending the money on the team if they're not any good, which I've never really understood because they're still providing me entertainment, whether they're good or they're bad.
I think you had a good point. At least there is a show of progress the Lions are making that you can't say the same about some other NFL teams out there. Like there sure. is, like they may not always produce the result you want, but compared to something like, say, the Browns, who seem to do this same song and dance every 2 years, or like the Rams, who are just rudderless and have basically like told St. Louis to screw themselves and just keep going 500 every year in their existence. Like there are some teams that we right now consider bottom feeders that at least they try to improve their position, and then there's others that just aren't even trying in the NFL. I think the Lions belong to the camp that is trying, so, but again, we're kind of tying, you know, we're kind of tying progress and quality of the product back to the ticket. So I would even go further that stepping back, is that even fair to make that assumption in the first place? What would you say on that, Ryan, if you are not dead right there?
I'm not dead, but can you restate that question in a way that I can understand it?
I don't even remember the question.
He's basically saying, do you think it's fair to tie quality of the product to ticket prices, or should it go beyond that?
No, I mean, I don't find that correlation to be existent. I mean, if you're upset with the product, how about you voice your opinion by not putting money into it?
Yeah, like you can say your opinion on the way out. I'm pretty sure one of our own, Jerry Mallory, like, had at one point, I don't know if he went through with it, but I think he was talking about canceling his tickets, and he did send in, like, you know, notice of, like, his own grievances on certain things. Like, you can do that. Like, you can definitely, you know, let your voice be known that way, but, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, like, you have to understand that there's an operating cost for, you know, a field and a team of players and a staff and a faculty and all these other things that go into it. I mean, that's where the cost is, and that's where the cost is being passed on to you, the consumer. It doesn't have anything to do with the quality of the performance of the team. So,
that kind of,
I don't know. I feel like that's way too plain to understand.
Yeah, like I don't think that because you have the most successful team in the country, that thus means that your ticket should be the most expensive. Like, turning this around, right? Like, I don't know. The Patriots tickets, are they the most expensive in the country? Like, I don't have that information in front of me, but I'm probably thinking that it's probably more like a team like, you know, San Francisco, that's probably near the top of what it costs to go to games.
I'm sure Dallas games are expensive.
Yes, and we've seen what Dallas has been in the past few years.
Can we also think about the demographic that lives in both Dallas and Arlington, or that also lives in,
Santa
Foxborough? Yeah, and like, you know, in Santa Clara, like, you have to think about the people who live there. I mean, those people can afford spending more money on tickets, or it can be like more corporate people who end up, you know, buying into these things. I mean, we all know that Detroit is like a rebuilding city, so.
Yeah, I'm loading this up here. No, go on.
I was just going to say, Ryan kind of brought up the interesting point about how this is to cover costs for, you know, stadium maintenance, all that sort of stuff. And you kind of hear these fans with the same breath where they're talking about ticket prices they're demanding cheerleaders, they're demanding better Wi-Fi, they're demanding better food. It's like, well, how do you want to pay for all that?
That kind
of
takes stuff. That takes stuff, yeah. By the way, I found the five most expensive NFL stadiums. This is from, I don't know the veracity of this site, but they have something called a fan cost index here. So number five is Soldier Field for the Bears. Number four is Gillette Stadium, so the Patriots. Then MetLife, so that's Giants and Jets. AT&T Stadium for the Cowboys. And then the most expensive is the 49ers. So, I mean,
we named off like three of the top five.
Yeah. Like, and again, a lot of those teams right now, like, they're not like the most consistently best teams in the country.
Chicago?
Yeah, like the only one on there that is consistently really good on there is probably
the Patriots.
The Patriots. Like, yeah, I didn't say the Seahawks. The Seahawks aren't on here. The Packers aren't on here.
And I think the last kind of interesting point that was brought up in all this was a point brought up by Rod Wood. And it kind of goes along with what Ryan was saying, but he's talking about how these ticket prices help, like, directly help the team. So it helps with their practice field. It helps fund a better equipment. And I don't know if I completely buy that argument, but it's something that I don't think most fans really consider.
Well, I'm not fully into that just on the basis of the television deals are just so goddamn lucrative, right? And like there's more than enough money going around. But yeah, I understand that too. I'm going to be a little more leery about what owners are pumping back into their teams, knowing what I know about it. Most NFL owners. I'm not saying this about the Fords necessarily. I'm just saying this looking at the macro image of NFL owners, which at times can sometimes look like Scrooge McDuck when it comes to the money. And I can understand then from that angle where the fan mistrust of raising ticket prices comes from.
Sure.
So I think this is all kind of underscoring the fact, though, that the experience at home is still I love going to Lions games, but if I decide that I'm going to stay and just watch it on television, my experience really isn't that hampered. In fact, I'm able to pay attention to certain parts of the game better when I'm at home.
Yeah, this is kind of what the NFL has been fighting for the past few years with Red Zone and, you know, all the satellite packages and fantasy football and all the sort of stuff where the football fan needs to be engaged in 10 things at once when they're watching football, and it's hard to keep up with the in-home experience. I mean, obviously in-home they offer certain things that you can't offer, like a crowd experience and you know, actually being there when something happens. But
is the crowd experience really a plus at this point? Like, that's the thing. Like, I am at home on my couch. I'm able to get my own snacks. I don't need to pay $15 for a Moscow Mule. Like, I don't have to sit next to Crackman or some other super fan who's cursing nonstop. Like, I can actually stay. That's actually his nickname. Don't laugh at that.
Who's Crackman?
Ron Crackiola?
I can't get past that.
Wait, he's the old guy with the mustache and the hard hat?
Okay.
And the jean overalls. Yeah,
I didn't know his name was Crackman.
Yeah. His super fan name is Crackman. Yes.
Shout out to Crackman
to Ron Crackiola. But I'm just saying, like, I don't know if the, like, yeah, it's cool to share high fives with all of your fans when you're there, but I mean, it's kind of a close shave when I'm comparing that to being able to have my buddies over and just sit on the couch and make our own wings and our own drinks, and yeah, and then being able to get up and, like, you know, do other things during the commercial breaks.
Yeah, I mean, the experience at home is one that obviously it seems like you can put a price on it, because there are a lot of people who, I think it's really ever since, like, the revolution of, like, the HD television, I think that really was able to bring an experience to your house. Like you mentioned, Chris, where you can see a lot of things and you can notice a lot of things that you can't really maybe get a good vantage point when you're watching at a stadium. I really think when it comes down to me as a fan, if we want to talk about, you know, specifically what gets us into a stadium, it's going to take some kind of, like, special occasion. It's either going to be like a Monday night game, or it's going to be like a Sunday night game where there's a lot of kind of like hoopla going around. Like, there's an experience to go down to, you know. It's not anything where, you know, I love going to Tigers games in the summer because the weather's nice, and it's nice to go out and just kind of, like, walk around the ballpark and, you know, enjoy the weather. That experience is not available at Ford Field, and it won't be for a long time, right? Because they're not getting an outdoor stadium anytime soon. So nix that idea real quick.
But if they got an outdoor stadium, my will to go to a game would actually plummet.
Oh yeah, so would mine too. But that's the thing, is that, like, you know, baseball's played in you know, good weather. I can go out and I can have a good time, and I don't really need to pay attention to the game all that much, when really I want to be kind of engaged in a football game in a different way, I guess. I don't know. I think they're two entirely different beasts, but at the end of the day, I mean, you see this across football, not even just professional, but college stadiums just completely, you know, almost empty.
Yeah, they're struggling too, and I know even in some other sports too, like the NCAA tournament, the basketball tournament that just wrapped, they were struggling to fill some of those NFL arenas they've converted into NFL stadiums they've converted into arenas. Like, where was it? It was Houston for the Final Four, NRG Stadium. And, like, some of those, like, they were really struggling to fill that place. Like, even in the final game, they were really struggling to fill it.
Yeah. I don't know. To me, there's still something to be said about the in-game experience. I'm a fan who makes sure that I go to at least one Lions game per year. I have since I was a kid, even though I'm out on the West Coast. And given that an away game is kind of a different experience and comes with its own thrills and excitement of either being in a new stadium or kind of being in enemy territory. But I don't know. It does come with its drawbacks. I know, like, whenever there's a review going on, I'm trying to text my buddies who are watching at home asking if it's going to get overturned or not, which is something it seems like they'd be able to fix and, you know, show us good replays and things like that. But for whatever reason, they don't. But I don't know. I just love being in that environment. And there's also something a little freeing about not flipping between 10 different games at once and just kind of like focusing in on one game and seeing how things are happening on the sidelines, you know, seeing things that you right. would never obviously see in a yeah. television broadcast.
I think that definitely speaks to like the impatient sports fan these days. I mean, just wait until the new call comes out, whether or not it's going to be overturned or it's going to stand. I mean, like, do we really have to like jump on the phone? Like,
yeah, I don't know. Or I would say
we're sitting at home. Yeah. Like, do we need to flip back and forth between channels?
I would say this, if you really want me to come to more Lions games, there is one thing that you could really improve on. And that is
cheerleaders.
No, thanks for playing, but no, the tailgating experience. Like, I've tried to get people to come out to those tailgates outside of Ford Field, and, like, by and away, it's probably, like, the least tailgate-accessible place, those parking lots. Like,
it's cold.
Well, it's cold, but, I mean, you can have tailgates in cold weather and still be, like, I don't know what it is. It's because, like, unlike a lot of other stadiums, the parking lots are, like, segmented and scattered around downtown Detroit. There really right. isn't a good communal tailgating place. And tailgating for me in football, like, I mean, I grew up as a Notre Dame fan. A lot of my memories go back to tailgating before, like, Notre Dame games. And you can tailgate all over the goddamn campus at Notre in South Bend. Like, I love tailgating and football. Yeah. But I think that's part of it for me. Like, I mean, you get 1 p.m. starts. You should have more than enough time to tailgate.
Well, yeah, but I think you're totally right, Chris. Like, you hit it spot on. Like, everything is so fractured in downtown Detroit. It's not the same experience. I mean, when I talk to my dad about how much he used to tailgate at the Silverdome, I mean, it's one giant parking lot.
Right, yeah, and a lot of NFL stadiums have that. Yeah, a lot of NFL stadiums have that. If you go to, Jeremy, you've been to Qualcomm.
Like, yeah, San Diego's like that for sure.
San Diego's like that.
Arizona has life is like the best.
Yeah, Arizona's really good about that, yeah.
They have like a patch of grass where everyone brings their own little canopy. You can toss around the ball. And yeah, I've never seen a tailgating place just like Arizona. And I don't really know how you fix that problem in Detroit if you even
Yeah,
really
you're kind of at a loss as far as downtown real estate. It's not like you can just, you know, start tearing out stuff around there because that part of downtown is still thriving.
Well, you could if you're building a new Red Wing Stadium, but.
Well. that's dependent upon the city giving you that land for free.
Which, okay. Poor Mike Ilitch.
Yeah, poor Mike Ilitch and his billions. I think we've exhausted that, so we should probably take a break here, and then we will get into the mailbag, take your questions. We don't have too many because it came out a little late, but we'll get to them, and probably some pop culture talk, because I know we've got some takes from the weekend that was. No football, but another important event near and dear to our hearts here.
Multiple events.
Multiple events.
So important for the culture.
Ugh. All right, it's mail time, as they say on PTI. It is our mailbag segment. It's what we do every week to close out the show and have a little fun. Again, you can send these questions every week to @PrideOfDetroit on Twitter or look for the Ask POD articles on prideofdetroit.com the night of it. This one got up a little late, so we have less questions than we usually get. That's my apology. I was doing my taxes today and I was very angry and I forgot until Jeremy reminded me at like 5 p.m. So
that's why I'm the boss.
He is the boss. So let's try to find some questions here. We're going to try to answer everything we can. And I feel like, though, we've got to start with talking about a little bit of WrestleMania. You ready here, Ryan?
I'm so ready. Jeremy, hot tag me in for this one.
Like it. Okay. J-Wings 40. We're going to get back to J-Wings. You have a great football question here, too, J-Wings 40. We are going to get to it, but I want to start with the WrestleMania angle. He wants to ask straight up, what is your favorite match of the WrestleMania weekend? So this is going to include like NXT TakeOver and everything else. So, Ryan, I did not watch NXT TakeOver. I just watched WrestleMania. What is your favorite from the weekend?
All right. And first of all, we are entirely spoiled as wrestling fans because we get this entire weekend now with NXT TakeOver. You get, for the people who are so persnickety and persmarkety, rather, about how they like to enjoy their wrestling, WrestleMania is this event that's definitely catered towards a different crowd. So it's awesome that WWE puts on this show that lends itself more to the diehard wrestling fans. And I would say that my favorite match from the entire weekend was from NXT TakeOver, the match between Sami Zayn and Shinsuke Nakamura, because Shinsuke is my new favorite thing about wrestling ever, all time. He's my favorite wrestler of all time. And that changes usually like every hour. But right now, he's my favorite of all time. The match that they put on was so hard-hitting. And these guys literally beat the crap out of each other for, you know, 20 minutes. And it just looks so violent. Like the knee strikes and the kicking. And, you know, it's just so great. Like those two guys are so great. And with Sami Zayn, you know, letting Nakamura get the pin, obviously, it was some old school wrestling booking where Sami Zayn was kind of leaving the territory and making the jump up to WWE, but it was great. It was a great scene, and I think the other thing about that match that Alex Reno and myself even talked about a little bit was that match really benefited from an entirely hot crowd at that event. So Shinsuke Nakamura versus Sami Zayn, I definitely recommend you go watch that on the WWE Network. You can pay $9.99 for it.
Yeah, I would say I just watched WrestleMania itself. I mean, that Intercontinental Ladder match, that is always one of the highlights of WrestleMania, of the WrestleMania lineup, is that ladder match.
Yeah, and be honest, Chris, say what your real favorite match was, because I know what it is.
Oh, yeah, no, it was...
It was great. Be honest,
it was Shane O'Mac Undertaker.
Oh, okay. Kalisto versus Ryback.
Oh, no. Actually, yes. That's my second favorite. And it's a shame that was like before everything else there. Like Kalisto Ryback was like quintessentially very good, and it deserved more than like a 1/3 full Cowboy Stadium that it got because no one could get in because of some screw up with the Cowboys security there. Like that was good because it bucked the whole size equals good trend that Vince seems obsessed with. It's good because I am falling more and more in love with Lucha, and I'm actually going to watch the whole first season of Lucha Underground here this weekend. Yeah, highly recommend. I'm purchasing it off iTunes. I'm not waiting for it on Netflix. But I also really like Kalisto as like a character in the WWE. He's quickly become someone I've gone over for. And Ryback, like, for someone we used, like, people kind of shit on, of Ryback having, like, real no skill, like, a lot of people weren't really getting into this whole idea of Ryback becoming a rising force in the WWE. He really played the heel, like, not even a full heel, but, like, just as a big guy standing in the middle of the ring menacing. Like, you could see it because when he would kick out of a Kalisto pin, like, he would kick out so violently, like, they showed it as him kicking out so violently that Kalisto would just get sent flying.
Yeah, and he was that was great.
Like, he would just stand in the middle of the ring and just bully Kalisto with his size. And the finish was a little rushed, but I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. It was everything I could ask for on that particular fight. And I think both those guys will go a long way. I hope they keep doing it, actually, because it seems like...
Go ahead, Chris.
No, I'm done.
So I was going to say, though, an interesting tidbit I got from WrestleMania weekend was a great interview with Kalisto. I believe it was something that David Shoemaker had mentioned You know, he used to write for ESPN and Grantland. Now he's on The Ringer with Bill Simmons. He does great wrestling stuff, but he mentioned that in a discussion with Kalisto that he mentioned that he's really only like shown the WWE like 10% of his moveset. Like That's he's crazy. Saving, he's saving all of these incredible spots and all these incredible moves, you know, to really kind of like elongate his career. And when he needs to pull him out, he's going to pull him out, which I think is just awesome. Speaking I mean, he has which, he has the potential to be kind of like a.
Yeah.
I don't want to. You know, pigeonhole him as you know the next Rey Mysterio or something like that because he's totally not. But.
No, he has a lot of potential as yeah. a luchador in there. And speaking of which, also pretty good ladder match for Sin Cara while we're at on the Lucha Dragons. Like, was the one he got knocked off the top ladder and like. The top of the ladder and like caught the top rope and then piled into like three guys or something like that.
Yeah, that ladder match, every kind of just
everything
like a car,
about that was fantastic.
Wreck.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, the way it started with Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens just trading punches, I can watch those guys trade punches in the middle of a ring, you know, 7 days a week. It's great, but
yeah, and then Taker Shane was like everything. We like Shane jumped like 20 feet off the top of that cell.
Yeah, some of the videos from ringside that were on Instagram were great. Like, you could audibly hear Michelle Beadle in one of the...
Yeah, Bill Simmons had, like, a video out, and people are like, no, don't do this.
Yeah, he's up there, and he's kind of, like, you know, doing the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit cross while he's on top of the on top of the cage and about to jump, and you hear Michelle Beadle go, like, no, Shane, no! It's like, oh, man. Okay.
Oh, no.
I think that's kind of gonna be the... That's going to kind of be the lasting image, I think, from WrestleMania 32 is Shane jumping off that cage.
And then hitting nothing because Taker rolled off the table.
Absolutely nothing. I mean,
God, I was terrified he actually hurt himself.
I thought he was going to show up to Raw the next day in like a full body cast with just like a slit for his mouth.
It's unbelievable. And what'd you think about the Raw after that, before I move on to the rest of our questions and bring Jeremy back in here?
The Raw after Mania usually is one of the top Raws every year.
I only bring it up because I know a lot of people like Alex Reno was unhappy with WrestleMania because they were great fights, but he didn't like a lot of the endings. But I felt like the Raw after WrestleMania kind of made up for a lot of that.
Well, that's the great thing about wrestling too, is that the story never ends. I mean, if people think that, you know, the stories are all supposed to end at WrestleMania, then guess what? You're getting worked. I mean, that's like the essence of wrestling in and of itself is that you're getting worked at the end of the day. So, you know, the Raw after WrestleMania did a lot of kind of like retconning or, you know, setting things straight. I mean, AJ Styles got his rub back from losing to Jericho the night before. Now he's the number one contender in the entire
company. Against Roman Reigns, who is basically taking this not quite heel turn, but he's like, I'm not a bad guy. I'm not the good guy. I'm the guy. Which is an amazing angle for him that he's finally found now that he's got the belt.
Right, and how close is that to, you know, when Rocky Maivia decides to be the corporate champion back, like, in the 90s, right? Like, he decides that, like, he's the guy, like, in the Nation of Domination. I mean, so you can see kind of, like, some parallels starting to form and whether or not they're going to formally turn Reigns heel at any time. Who knows? But I heard a great quote from John Cena over WrestleMania weekend that says, you know... during an interview, somebody asked him, you know, when are you ever going to turn heel? And he says, do the people boo me? And yeah. The reporter goes, yeah, they do. He's like, okay.
That I know exactly so the interview you're talking about. That was on yeah. Complex Magazine. You should go, if you want to go check it out, I think it's somewhere on off of complex.com. It's a yeah. really good interview.
Yeah. So, and plus, I mean, WrestleMania was great because you got all the legends back, you know, Shawn, Foley,
Stone Cold. Austin.
Yeah, I mean, you got a little bit of everything for any, you know, a little bit of everything.
John Cena came back along with The Rock and beat the Wyatts in like 6 seconds, which kind of sad to see the Wyatts go that way, but whatever.
Yeah, but at the same time, think about it. You know, the Wyatts didn't really have a spot at WrestleMania, but they decided to put all three of them into, you know, a segment with The Rock. You know, a 20-minute segment with The Rock. I mean, just
with
being
like
in the ring
with
The Rock.
Half of that segment is, like, The Rock's entrance, though, but yeah.
Yeah, and him always pointing towards his, like, arm, and yeah, we get it, you can have goosebumps, Rock, it happens every WrestleMania, but I can see Jeremy has, like, a bullpen hammer, and he's gonna
He's going to swing it. Let's get the one last wrestling question out of the
Actually,
way.
Actually, he's about to hit the people's elbow real quick.
He's going to hit us with the people's elbow.
This is not a visual medium.
One more wrestling question, we move on.
Oh.
Sean Sweeney asks, hypothetical WWE champion and a draft thought. Do you think if he was in that prime today, Jake the Snake Roberts would be the world champion?
No. No, because like you don't need the title. Like he had Damien. He had the snake. You don't need a championship belt when you have a snake in a bag and you're taking it down to the ring. You don't need a belt when you have a snake.
That's true. Yeah, they're just like that. That's why Cena doesn't have a belt anymore, because he's John Cena.
He doesn't need one.
Yeah,
exactly.
This is how
wrestling works, people.
Yeah. By the way, here is the draft question. This is us getting back to football. Welcome back, Jeremy.
You can stop hitting the 4-15-second button, everybody.
Why not Eli Apple at 16?
I'm not sure what I feel about cornerback in the first round. I haven't really looked too much into Apple himself. But.
There's some really good ones going up high. Like Jalen Ramsey might be he might be the only other option at number one besides Laramie Tunsil at this point. Like Jalen right. Ramsey is that good. He is just a physical beast, no matter if you're playing him at corner or safety or wherever. Like, it's like, I was listening to someone talking about, and might even have been on one of these podcasts, like, the idea of, like, hey, is he going to play corner? Is he going to be safety? He's like, he's going to play football. Like, he's that good. And then Vernon Hargreaves isn't that far behind when it comes to that position. Right. So there's some top corners in this draft. I just don't know if Eli Apple's definitely round one. I just don't know, like, do the Lions really need a cornerback at number in the first round? That's kind
of the
question.
Thing. Like, if you're drafting a guy in the first round like that, you're kind of planning on him being your number one corner. And I think Darius Slay has proven more than enough that he's capable of doing that on his own. That being said, you know, having two guys who could be number one doesn't hurt. And at this point, the Lions don't have a clear outside cornerback to go opposite Slay. You know, they grabbed a couple guys in free agency, but no one that's really lighting the world on fire. They've just kind of had an experience here and there. So I can't speak much to the Eli Apple person and his talent alone. I think a cornerback in the first round can make sense. It's probably not where I would go, but it isn't a pick that maybe I would get upset about like I would wide receiver.
What about someone like, see, here's the problem, because I want to throw what about Sua Craven at you, but then I realize, like, Sua Craven's interesting because he plays both, like, safety and outside linebacker, but, like, he's going to get pegged into a hole coming into the NFL. He's right. Not going to kind of do that hybrid thing that he did at USC.
Or and plus, or that you will see this year from Jabril Peppers, right, Jeremy?
Yeah.
You got it. But no... but with Sua Cravens, that fills more of a need with he kind of filling like that strong safety, which the Lions definitely don't really have someone to start opposite
right.
Glover Quinn at this point. So, you know, if I don't know if he's really a first round guy or not. Like I said, I have like, gone strong into
his grades
the secondary.
Are all over all over the place. I don't think Reno thinks that highly of him, but
yeah. But I could be open to the idea of cornerback in the first round. It just wouldn't be my ideal pick.
All right. I promised one more thing from Jay Wings 40, and then we'll get to some new people on questions in here because we've kind of gone between these two. But he also had a draft question. He wanted us to look at someone else from Baylor because he's a Baylor homer. And he apparently, Baylor, if you are someone who follows a little bit deeper on college football like I do, like, you know that Baylor for the past few years has had a 400-pound offensive guard that has also caught like two touchdowns last year. Like, it is part of their package is that this guy will line up at tight end. His name is Laquan McGowan. I've shared his picture here in the Slack with you guys. He is a big, big, big boy.
Sure, yeah. Well, see how well it worked putting J.J. Watt as the Wildcat and do it with that guy.
I'm just trying to find his stats here. To, again, try to remember what he did there. So he had two touchdowns. He had 18 yards in 2014, 18 yards average. So one reception for 18 yards, two receptions in 2015 for 23 yards.
And if you're wondering what this guy looks like, if you don't have a computer in front of you to look him up, I was going to say, he's like Nick Fairley before he went on his Subway diet.
Like, this guy, I'm pretty sure, that's not a crop top he's wearing. That jersey is just struggling. The jersey and the pants are both struggling to stay on. But, like, this was, like, he was, like, the centerpiece of the SB Nation Heisman Trophy, which was given out to basically to, like, the most outstanding lineman and fat guy touchdowns out there. Like,
That's the best award in college football.
I was going to say, that's a high honor.
It's a very high honor. Like,
very prestigious.
Was tailor-made for the Heisman because meant to catch touchdowns.
Did you mention that he played guard, too?
Yeah, he plays guard and tight end.
Oh, wonderful. How many pancakes does he have? I'm hungry.
Like, probably, like, speaking of wrestling, probably more than The Rock did on his cheat meal.
Oh, boy.
Which was that? What was it, a dozen pancakes he had on that thing?
Unreal.
I like, almost escaped the wrestling talk.
Almost. You never can, though.
Nope. All right, let's move on to some more questions. Let's switch over to Twitter for a second. Andy at Friday Night at Joe, why are the Red Wings? Aren't the Lions punishment enough?
The Red Wings are bad, man. They're bad. I mean, I want them to keep the streak alive, and they have one last chance to do so if they beat the Rangers, but they don't deserve to be in the playoffs. They're a bad team. And it hurts to watch them right now.
Yeah, they're not good. They're definitely not good. A lot of problems with this Red Wings team.
We should just probably leave it there. Yeah.
But then, on top of everything, Datsyuk might be leaving for the KHL. It's like, oh, man.
And on top of that, the Red Wings, because of a provision in the CBA, if you sign a player who's over 35 years old, you get stuck with their cap hit if they decide to retire. So not only will we be without Pavel Datsyuk, he will still be a $7.5 million cap hit.
Fun.
Lots to look forward to with them Red Wings.
April in the D.
April in the D.
Somehow the Pistons are just going to find a way to flame out from this, you know, wonderful gift they have, which, speaking of which,
Bulls lost, though.
The Bulls lost, and yet somehow I'm terrified of the Pistons still missing the playoffs.
Okay, go ahead.
No, sorry, I just want to get on to some of these other questions.
Sounds great.
Eric Allen at Evil Eric Allen asks, if we went tackle in the first round, any chance we would take Conklin over Decker? Please say no.
I know you kind of have a take on this, Chris, don't you?
No, I really don't. I just find it fascinating that you and Reno, and even me through Reno in the mock drafts, we're all high up on Decker. And yet all the SB Nation people seem to be really high up on Conklin and down on Decker. Like, Dan Cater thought that your pick of Taylor Decker at 16 was a reach. Meanwhile, right. Stephen White for SB Nation also was out there profiling. He has a great profile up. I love Stephen White's profiles. But he's out there just drooling over Jack Conklin because he goes out and, to paraphrase him, stomps on cockroaches when he plays offensive tackle. Like, it's kind of fascinating to see kind of the disparity between a lot of Michigan sports fans, how they feel about Jack Conklin, and then other sports fans and analysts, and where that difference is between whether you would have Decker or Conklin.
You have any take on this MSU Sparty, Ryan Matthews?
I think they're both talented guys from the things that I've read and the things that I've heard people talk about. Maybe I would more so lean towards the Lions taking Conklin just because I want to see how red Reno's face can get.
Dude, well, you'd be there in Chicago, and it's like with the 16th pick overall, the Detroit Lions select Jack Conklin. Like, what happens with Reno in that instant?
He immediately becomes Michael Scott from The Office.
But he's kind of... There's always this fad that happens around this time draft year where guys kind of out of nowhere just skyrocket up draft boards, and I don't know, in years past sometimes it's just because we're actually getting more information about what scouts are actually saying about these people, but a lot of times it's just like it's one or two mock draft guys, you know, analysts, people who aren't actually involved in the NFL, they kind of start the momentum for these guys and everyone else kind of rides their coattails.
Yeah, I kind of felt that about Conklin, but then I saw what Stephen White was writing about, and I'm like, maybe I need to rethink this, because I trust Stephen White when it comes to this stuff.
Wasn't that kind of the same thing that's happened with Laquon Treadwell at this point, with, you know,
kind Mel Kiper? The opposite way, yeah.
Yeah, in the opposite way, where it's the Lions have kind of come full circle to back to needing a wide receiver.
Right.
I don't think we talked to Jeremy wrote about it, and I agree with him. There's no chance. Like there's a chance Lions take a wide receiver in the first, but
don't say no chance, because there is a chance.
There is a chance, I will say it is honestly, infinitesimally small.
Because I mean, if you know, I know the Patriot way thing is overdone, and I probably mentioned it in every podcast, but when's the last time they took a wide receiver in the first round?
I mean, it's been a while. I hate comparing our franchise to the Patriots nonstop. I'm really getting tired of this.
But it needs to be said, though. I mean, good teams don't really make that sexy pick like that early.
I don't even think it has anything to do with being a sexy pick or not. I just don't think it's logical right now with where the Lions are to go and take another wide receiver at 16. And I don't think Laquon Treadwell is the guy to be that. If you're taking a wide receiver at 16 in this draft, it has to be a guy for the future, like the guy. And I don't know if Laquon Treadwell is that.
No.
That's your draft analysis. Me wondering if Laquon Treadwell is the guy.
He's not going to be Megatron, so.
No.
And Jeremy Reisman covered that today on SB Nation.
Yep. Slightly related question from Underdog. Prediction time. How many starters will Quinn get out of the 2016 draft?
Unless they do a lot of trading, I wouldn't bank on more than three guys starting this year. I mean,
I would even put that number at two.
Yeah, because their third round pick is a compensatory pick. It's not even their normal third round pick, so that's basically an early fourth round pick. So, yeah, if the Lions get anything more than two, they've probably done well for themselves, or maybe that's a sign that their current roster isn't that good.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, like, first round will probably start unless it's, like, a tackle, in which case he'll probably start by, like, week four or so. And then, yeah, it's hard to project that out. I think 2-3 is probably the safe bet to go.
Yeah.
This isn't exactly a hyper-deep draft either. Like, it's deep in, like, the first round depth, first two rounds depth. But, of course, there, you know, you hit that shelf drop-off. We got a couple of game and TV, actually two TV questions. Let's get to these television questions because this is the offseason. Yeah. Harrington HOF asks, which show is better, Justified or Breaking Bad?
Man, I wish I had gotten into Justified. All I heard was positive things about that, but I've never actually seen it.
I haven't seen either of these, but I've heard shade dropped at Justified, that it just kind of just doesn't work out for a lot of people. I think Breaking Bad, though, Breaking Bad praise is almost universal.
It was really good. I didn't like the finale, and I know I'm in the minority there, but I was in on Breaking Bad from the beginning, and it's a fantastic show. If the least you know about it going into, if you still are one of those people that haven't seen it, don't try not to learn anything about it and just ride the wave.
Where are you thinking on it, Ryan? If you're still alive.
I'm still alive. I'm still breathing here. I'm no Pomerian, so I'm still here. If you listen to the first 5 minutes of the podcast, you get that joke. But I did watch the first, I think, three seasons of Breaking Bad. I don't know. I never finished it. I don't know if that's a testament to what I thought of the show. I thought it was good. I don't know. I never watched Justified, though, so.
This is a bad question.
Yeah, if I had to choose between those two shows, I'd probably go Monday Night Raw.
I like it. All right, one more TV question. This is a little more broad, so maybe we'll find TV shows that we've actually watched. So my apologies, Harrington HOF. Big Haircut asks, this question is focused towards Jeremy. So here you go, Jeremy. So
all right.
During the what is kind of the best show out there on TV and Netflix? What is worth spending time on during this off season on television or Netflix?
Oh man, how much time you got? I could name a bunch.
Well, let's start with the top one that just kind of wrapped, and I'm sad that I didn't get on board at the start because I've heard it, like, really good things about it, and I will definitely be looking for it on demand if I can. The People versus O.J. Simpson, which just wrapped on FX.
Yep. It's a phenomenal show.
I've seen my Twitter blow up every time it's on television.
Spoiler alert, he's not guilty in the end.
Spoiler, wrestling's not real. Yeah, that's the same kind of argument, all right? Cool it over there. No, the show is so well acted. It's campy in the music that they choose. They mix real footage with, you know, the fake footage. And even though Cuba for OJ is kind of a weird choice, everything else is phenomenal. The person who plays Marsha Clark is phenomenal. They go deep into jury selection and Marsha Clark's, you know, all the sexist things she had to deal with. And it's just like a really, really phenomenal show. And there's also, I would highly recommend, I don't remember what website has it, but they have someone interviewing Marsha Clark after every single episode, seeing how she thought the show portrayed what actually happened. And that show's lit. If you have some sort of way to access that show, which I don't even know how you can at this point, find it and watch it.
Well, I think my hat is going to probably be in there considering that I'm going to be watching Lucha Underground. Ryan, I know you and Alex have been very high up on the new season of Daredevil on Netflix.
Daredevil was wonderful. Season 2 was it was great. Sometimes I go back and forth whether or not I would like to have a Punisher spinoff. I know that you would be fully on board for that, Chris.
Get out of here.
But Daredevil 2 is some good TV. I'm not sure if I liked it as much as I liked Jessica Jones season 1, though. I'm still kind of holding out on how great Jessica Jones season 1 was, but I have to start watching some of these great shows that Jeremy has kind of dropped in the Slack room that people have talked about, whether or not it's like Mr. Robot. I've never watched that before.
Let me drop a couple quick ones. I'm still trying to finish Flash season 1 because I've been hearing that Flash season 2 that's on right now has been really good. But drop your knowledge here.
Yeah, I'm not in on the superhero stuff, but let me just drop like 4 or 5 shows that are coming up or in the middle. We've got The American season 3, no, season 4 I think. That just started. Catch up on, I don't know, Amazon or something. We've got Silicon Valley coming back, HBO in a couple weeks. I'm not into the Game of Thrones thing, but it's tonight. We've got Broad City, Comedy Central. Really, really funny show. Just featured Blake Griffin. Hillary Clinton's on an episode this season. Get at it. And Better Call Saul. So if you've watched Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul. Season 1's on Netflix. Season 2's in the middle of everything right now. Season 2 isn't quite as good as season 1, but...
You mentioned
still.
Amazon. Have you seen any of the Man in the High Castle series on there? Or
no, I've heard good things about that too. The only thing I think
I've
seen
check that out.
That on Amazon is the show Catastrophe, which is really funny.
Yeah,
featuring Rob Delaney, a guy that kind of became famous on Twitter for being a comedian, and Transparent, which is also pretty good.
Like, watch Nathan for You.
Yes.
Jeremy turned me into a believer. Everything's on Hulu. watch Nathan for You and enjoy every minute of it.
Might be my favorite show right now is Nathan for You.
Why don't we run a pop culture website too? One last question to lead us into our outro. You know what it is by now. Ty Finch asks from @Finchity. I'm trying to read, make sure that's right. If Calvin said that one speech could make him come out of retirement, what would it entail?
There would only be one person who could give that speech, and his name is...
John Cena! Do we have to wait till he like baby wipes down his entire fucking keyboard?
No, the keyboard's fine. The floor is just like
a goddamn.
Okay, what did you spill on it aside from radioactive?
That's all it was. That's all I ever spill.
That stuff should be eating a hole through your floor right now.
Nah, man. We've got immunity because comics.
Jesus, God.
You're a real superhero, Jeremy. You never would have let your bike get stolen.
That was my Uncle Ben moment.
Yeah. Now you're going to go out and get bit like by a gecko or something.
I'll never let that shit happen again.
Become Gecko Man.
That's your fucking origin story of becoming a vigilante.
Your bike gets stolen, you get by a gecko.
You're gonna wear discounted like clearance items from the like Lance Armstrong Livestrong collection.
Your villain's gonna be the United States Postal Service.
With great apartment ownership comes great responsibility.
Oh, Jesus. This thing is just writing itself.
That's basically, instead of catching crooks, you're basically trying to figure out how to pay their rent every month.